Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, we'll be discussing why physical media still matters, selling away digital rights, smile, and our topic this week is obscure Halloween movies. Hopefully, you can walk away from this episode with a bit more to watch this Halloween month. Let's get on with the show. My name's Aaron Peterson. Joining me today, my fellow host, Troy Heinrichs.
Woohoo! Number two.
And also, Stan Daniel, or Stanley Daniel. How do you want to be known? Dr. Daniel? How do you want to be known here?
Dr. Daniel's just fine.
Okay. Dr. Daniel.
You forgot the PhD
at the end. Yeah. Oh, no, just MD. Just MD. Just, you know, don't give me too much credit.
Is it Daniel or Daniels? Daniel, right?
It's just one of me.
That's what I thought. Okay. So, Dr. Daniels here is a Patreon supporter. He's been on the show before. He was on our TV Doctor Battle Royale and a few other episodes. He's always a good time, and he's thank you for joining us because these other two bitches of the sea couldn't show up. So
they were just jealous because apparently you were having a good time with Dr. Stan.
Yeah.
Oh, we had a lovely conversation before Troy joined. It was a you know, PG-13 at least.
Bullshit. No, it was R. It was hard R. About those two. That's what it was. Fail. Now, Amanda and John won't be here because they're on, what are they on? Sabbatical? Vacation? They're off doing something.
They're figuring out who's going to win the bets because it sounded like John might be heading to a movie theater or went to a movie theater potentially last weekend.
Yes, we had a bet. I don't know if you're aware of this, Stan, but there has been a longstanding bet that John, because he's lived in the mountains the last year and a half, that John would go to a movie theater and see a movie before Amanda would be on time 4 weeks in a row. Now, this bet was months ago. And you'd think like she could just wrap this up because he's nowhere near a theater. And I mean, he's moving back to where to land soon. But now he's visiting some friends. And so he has the opportunity. So he might actually win because she hasn't made it 4 weeks in a row being on time.
Or 4 weeks in a row.
Yeah, she hasn't made it. Yeah, I think I'm the only one that's made it 4 weeks in a row. So I don't think anybody should be giving a grief on that one. Suckers. I want some of this vacation time. All right, well, I know it's a week old at this point, but Deadpool 3 with Hugh Jackman as Wolverine is confirmed to be coming in September 2024. I know he died in Logan, but that was in 2029, technically. So I think we can all relax. I, you know, still can be part of the MCU. And be fair, he has 5 years. He can make more Deadpool movies and not mess up his entire departure. Do you guys have an opinion on this? Because I literally wept myself. And I know it was like last week, and I just don't care. I'm still going to talk about it because I'm that excited because I've always wanted this to happen my whole life.
This is actually new news to me. I've been busy and just haven't seen this announcement. So when I saw it in the show notes, I got really excited. I think
did you know he was house-sitting for John while John was away?
So it's too far away from anything.
Living in the mountains.
Yep.
Reading by candlelight.
Well, you can't see it. I think you literally do have candlelight. There's like a lava lamp behind you. People can't see that, but it's sexy,
isn't it?
Yeah.
That's just my natural glow. Yeah. But no, this is great news. Well, they're the perfect pair. I can't wait.
Yeah, I think this is going to be amazing. And if we get to the movie and we watch the entire Deadpool 3 and Hugh Jackman never even shows up, then this is the most brilliant marketing play ever for the movie.
That would be fantastic.
Because I honestly, with this movie, I could actually see that happening. Like, we were promised Wolverine.
Since you didn't see it, Stan, they actually had a video where they were describing what the entire movie was going to be about, and they muted the whole thing. So it's obviously just them making a bunch of faces and sounds, and lip readers were trying to figure it out. It's just, I mean, he knows how to market. Ryan Reynolds knows how to market.
Yeah.
That's excellent. Well, yeah. I hope it's just another like Brad Pitt cameo from Deadpool 2.
No, I want him the whole movie. I want those two going at it. I want him making Wolverine origins jokes that are just, you know, 10 years too old. I don't care. Green Lantern jokes again and again. I don't care. I just want that for 2 hours.
How about
this is going to take place before Logan or after Logan or
before Logan? Because Logan happened 2029. So, I mean,
got it.
Yeah, I would assume. And that also means that Hugh Jackman's Wolverine is officially in the MCU, too.
Right.
I'm hoping for a Lethal Weapon-style buddy cop comedy.
Who's Joe Pesci in this? Like, who are they going to get for Joe Pesci? I guess you could have, what's his name from Ant-Man? Luis.
That'd be perfect.
Yep. I think I got this made. I can make this movie.
So then the question becomes, with the Doctor Strange movie, does the alternate version that Doctor Strange jumps into, where we get to see certain people in that version. Does that make them in the MCU or not in the MCU because it's a different universe?
What do you mean?
I'm just, you know, it's one of those like sci-fi time travel, blow your brain kind of questions. It's like, even though they're like in the movie, but they're, since they're in a different universe, does it count as being in the MCU?
I think it counts. Like once they show up, well, I guess it could be a multiverse, right? They could just say Deadpool. That's probably what they will do, because if he stays R-rated, they're not going to want to have him in the actual MCU, right? They don't want him showing up at Wakanda, dropping F-bombs left and right and showing his penis. That, I don't think that's going to play.
Right, because that's my question. Is since if Wolverine is actually going to be in Deadpool, is Deadpool taking place in the universe where we saw Charles Xavier?
Well, that has to. It has to, because we did see Patrick Stewart, so there is a world where it exists. Or right. You could have Deadpool like hopping from universe to universe. I could see that, too.
I mean, it is the multiverse phase, right? So
sure.
And at some point, Hugh Jackman is going to have to be replaced as Wolverine.
You shut your whore mouth, all right? We're not.
I don't want it, but, you know, aging is a reality. And like I said, he died in 2029.
Did you miss the ballot here? Like, there's no aging anymore. James Earl Jones will play Darth Vader forever.
We're getting there. We're getting there.
Forever. Aging is gone. And remember, they could always do what they've been doing, which is go reboot some stuff or remake some stuff or go back to the past and then just have a young Wolverine as well in order to make that happen. Because that's the thing to do in Hollywood now, too, is do the prequel.
I'm just so excited. They've teased this for so long. I mean, those two just being together so many times, they've taken shots at each other and worked on ad campaigns together. I mean, I just love the idea that they're finally making this. It's like a fan wet dream. Or me, it's my wet dream. I can't speak for all fans. Also, just to let you guys know, the Dahmer is now one of Netflix's biggest ever hits, by the way. So I don't know, you know, because Netflix does like to renew big shows. So I don't know if that means we get season two where Dahmer's like a lumberjack or something, but just know it's possible. It's a massive hit.
Dahmer 2. Dahmer opens a butcher shop.
I haven't watched it yet, but that's all I hear anyone at work talking about every time I'm there. It's just, have you seen Dahmer? Have you seen Dahmer? Have you seen Dahmer? So,
but you haven't seen it. Why wouldn't you? You don't care what your friends think. You don't take the time to go watch the show that they say you have to watch right that second.
I mean, not at all. Not at all.
Attaboy. That's the way to do it.
I still haven't seen any Fast and Furious movies, so.
Shut up. Jesus.
You invited this guy?
He doesn't understand what family's all about.
Don't we have Arjun's deepfake somewhere that we could have just played?
Yeah, can you stutter? That's not nice. I know.
No, he sold his rights so that he could get the hell out of the mountains.
Well, we've talked about it in the past. Now it's happening more and more. Digital purchases are being removed from catalogs. That's happened. Like Warner Brothers has deleted some of their digital content. They've done it on some of their HBO Max content. So that is saying to a lot of people that maybe physical purchases aren't going away as quickly as some people thought. If you really want to keep a movie or a TV season, you might want to just buy it physically. Where do you stand on physical media? Do you collect movies, or especially now that they're going to take all your digital stuff away whenever they damn well please?
Yeah, I used to have a fairly large Blu-ray and DVD collection, and moved to a smaller house and got rid of a lot of things. And since then, I realized it was a huge mistake, and I've been slowly building my catalog again for, you know, this very reason. I actually got some Blu-rays off of eBay today, and it's, you know, I like the way they look. I like the way they sound, and, you know, there's something about having physical media in your hand. It feels a little more safe. And mm-hmm. when things like this happens, it makes me feel better about my decisions to increase that library.
It's like a warm blanket to cuddle with.
Though it feels like such a chore, you know, turning on the Blu-ray player.
They're so lazy. We are so lazy. There's like some big announcement somebody was telling me about where they might, it'll probably be out by the time you guys hear this episode, but we're not going to wait for that announcement. But Moonlighting apparently looks to be streaming somewhere, or it looks to be coming to streaming finally. And I own all the seasons. I got excited because that means I don't have to get up if I want to watch it. And I think that's just both the saddest and coolest thing of the 2022.
Because I haven't seen any, like, I bought everything most of the stuff that I have bought is bought through iTunes or Apple Movies or whatever the hell they want to call it this week. And then it's connected into Movies Anywhere. So even if it was like gone from iTunes, like my Movies Anywhere still has it showing up over on Amazon Video or some other service. Now, they don't look exactly the same, right? So if I go into my iTunes, there might be a few movies over there that aren't over on the Amazon side, but vice versa. But they are, for some reason, still all in Movies Anywhere. So I don't know if any of this really affects me or not as the digital person. It's not that I don't want to buy the physical media. I just don't want to store the physical media. Like, there's got to be a better way to like buy physical without having physical.
Well, some of the tricks are is as time has gone on, you know, a lot of talent make deals that they make money off of streaming rights now, as well as physical purchases. So, you know, sometimes it can be more expensive to leave things streaming than it is to take them off streaming, because they have to pay, you know, they have to pay money for licensing rights and stuff like that. When they also have to pay actors, and, you know, there's more expense to it. So they are pulling some stuff off, like Adult Swim got pulled off of Prime. People that bought the seasons no longer have those seasons. And they've done it to other stuff, and they've done it to HBO Max movies and, you know, those online-only content. So for me, I only buy stuff that I absolutely definitely will watch again multiple times. You know, it's not like I used to be. I was like you, Stan. I used to have this huge, massive Blu-ray collection or DVD collection, and then I got to the point where I'm like, my whole house is full of clutter. That looks like crap. People come over, and they're just like, oh, you're pack rat. So I got rid of a bunch of it. And now I only purchase things that I absolutely love, but I also do that specifically so I make sure that those things I love, I always have access to. And I don't want to pay $4 every time I want to watch it. I don't want to have to subscribe to a service or anything. I'll just keep those specific things. So I think it's important to have some physical media.
I'm a little more selective about buying hard copies of things, but just for the space issue and the clutter issue. But I guess I'm just ignorant to how the business works. When you purchase a digital copy, you know, there's usually not, or maybe it's just implied in, you know, when you sign up for Prime Video or, mm-hmm. or Apple Movies, there's nothing saying, hey, you know, you don't own this, but it seems like if you purchase a digital copy, it should be yours, but
you're purchasing the rights to watch it, but they can actually retract that. If they deemed for whatever reason down the road, I don't.
And the copy is yours, but in order for it to be yours, you have to download that copy to your local storage. Then you'll have a copy of it, and it will still play. But if you hit the play button from directly on like Apple TV and stream it from Apple without playing your local copy, then that's where you run into problems.
If they pulled it, yeah. I mean, I can't see it happening a ton, but it is going to happen more and more. We've seen it a lot the last year. I mean, HBO's or WB's been doing it like crazy. They're just dumping stuff you didn't even know they were dumping. And somehow,
a lot of what they were talking about in this article is talking about pulling stuff from streaming, not from purchases.
Right. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Digital copies.
Yeah, but my purchased digital copy isn't what's being counted here. What's being touted in this article is
the streaming stuff. No, no, no. Those were purchased for $15 and they no longer have access to them anymore. That's what the article was talking about that I was referencing in that. So it very much is pulling down stuff that was purchased. And they can. If you actually read the agreements when you purchase them, or when you look at your whatever streaming platform you have, like Vudu or Prime or whatever, where you've purchased stuff, there's always a catch that they can get out of it. Apple does it too. Apple's pulled stuff before. I know they're infallible in your eyes, but Apple's done it too. Right now, we're going to move into Bruce Willis, and a lot of people running around saying that he sold his entire likeness rights away. That's not what happened. He sold his digital likeness rights away for an ad in Russia. Not for every project possible, but he still sold his digital likeness rights away. James Earl Jones also sold his voice rights to Darth Vader to Disney so that they can use the voice of Darth Vader forever. And even if James Earl Jones is no longer with us. So do you guys
think that's the key point on that one, right? It's that James Earl Jones sold his voice for Darth Vader. He didn't sell his voice for Mufasa.
Right. But they can, I don't know if Mufasa was covered, but I don't think so. I think it was just Darth Vader, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So it's not like you sell it to Disney and Disney can do whatever the hell they want with it. It's for that specific agreement that they agreed to.
Right. But
is the case of Bruce Willis.
Is this the beginning of a new era of filmmaking? And what do we think about this? Like, do you want to see deep fakes of your favorite actors long after they're gone, like that creepy Carrie Fisher in Rogue One, Troy?
I mean, I have no problem having a voice be deep faked because they're behind a mask or something, because it's the voice of the character. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, you've grown up knowing Darth Vader sounding one way. I mean, granted, it changes a little bit between 77 and, you know, 86, between, you know, the original Star Wars and Return of the Jedi, because
it'd be nice if we didn't see that anymore, because, you know, we don't need Skywalkers in literally everything. But anyway.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Or if they could just go back and clean up 77 one more time, George can just use these new, you know, voice prints in order to make James Earl Jones sound the same in all three of the movies.
Yeah, I want that so to be tweaked just a little bit. Just a hair.
You know, the facial thing is where it gets a little bit weird. They talk about the Uncanny Valley. There was a movie done, I think it was 2007, 2008. Square Enix tried to make its Final Fantasy game series into a movie. It was called Spirits Within, and it didn't do very well. It was actually a pretty okay story from a Final Fantasy perspective, but the problem was that the humans looked too real, that it was not believable. So in our minds, we kind of get freaked out by that. So it was kind of the thing with the Carrie Fisher at the end of Rogue One. I mean, it was basically the first marketing material for Smile, in my opinion, when she came on the screen. So,
wow. Nice way to connect those dots. I was like, where the hell is he going? Oh, here we are. Okay.
I'm of a couple of minds on this one. I'm happy that we're going to have Darth Vader sound like he did in even Obi-Wan, as opposed to sort of the frail sounding version in Rogue One, when James Earl Jones was actually, you know, still voicing it live. And then you could tell it was voiced by a really old man instead of what they used in the Obi-Wan series. And I'm even happier for these actors that they're able to continue to, you know, make money, on their previous works, even in their later years, when they might not be able to do the same things or sound the same way. So I think that's great. But, you know, as the admitted technophobe, it's what goes just beyond entertainment that has my concern. You know, what happens when you have a famous and popular celebrity who may have some tax troubles and may sign a little more rights than for just one commercial or one character, and maybe they're all of a sudden, you know, supporting Marjorie Taylor Greene or something along those lines, just because, you know, they need some cash. I'm not saying that people couldn't do that, you know, live, so, and do
Wesley Snipes
for money,
or Nick Cage, like, hey, just popping up in her ad because I shouldn't have signed that line.
But you know, it's always the dark side that I worry about. You know, I'm glad that these two guys are getting paid for their past efforts when they can't do it anymore. But you know, I'm always kind of a pessimist in these sort of things, so I do worry about what's next.
Wait, nobody's gonna applaud that he said the dark side of these things. Like, seriously, we're talking about Darth Vader. Nobody, come on.
He's got that Mustafar like backdrop going on, so I mean, it fits.
It's so ominous. Seriously, it looks like you had a strip.
I'll play devil's advocate, though. I mean, it's really, when you think about Rings of Power going on Amazon right now, like, why does the Tolkien estate, right? So Tolkien's been gone for a long time. So the Tolkien estate can still make cash off of his properties and his work. So why couldn't a voice actor or a face actor make money off of their work? I mean, it's kind of the same concepts if you compare the two, I would think.
There's nothing to I mean, if you want to sell your rights away, that's your right. It's your body, your voice, whatever. I just find it creepy. Like, I'm just trying to think of any. I love Jimmy Stewart, one of my favorite all-time actors. I don't want to see Jimmy Stewart popping up in things right now. I just think that'd be weird, and that'd creep me out. I feel like we're a culture that can't accept people that pass away. We really, really struggle with death overall. I don't think this is a healthy thing to just never be able to let go of things. You know, I just feel like psychologically this feels like a bad step, a step in the wrong direction, in my opinion.
Says the guy who watches the same porn video from 20 years ago because they've never aged in that video.
Okay. I don't know what the hell you're talking about, but all right. Jesus, I am well adapted to the modern era. Thank you so much.
Apparently you don't remember what you said on the 500th episode.
That was John. That was not Aaron.
Yeah, that was me.
My bad.
That was me. No, I don't remember. What did I say? What did he say? His sex tape? I don't know. Anyway, but do you get what I'm saying, though? Like, in terms of psychologically speaking, I mean, if we keep everybody alive forever, I mean, we're just never moving forward. You're constantly stuck in the past in a way. I just think that can't be healthy.
Oh, I certainly agree. We have a big problem in accepting the reality of our own mortality. I hadn't even thought about it in that context, but that's an even worse problem.
It's something that really occurs to me as something we should be concerned about when we're looking at this, as well as, you know, estates taking advantage of people that are long gone. I mean, I could see that as well. Families just milking, selling the rights to somebody who's already passed away. Like, do families control that? They can control, you know, John Wayne's, and a lot of people hate John Wayne, whatever, but his estate, could they sell the rights to John Wayne or Jimmy Stewart or Marilyn Monroe or Cary Grant or something like that? I mean, when they're long gone, I mean, what are the rules for something like this? It's kind of,
yeah,
weird.
It's like you get season tickets and you can hand them down maybe one or two generations before it goes back to the kitty. Like, what is it? The fourth generation removed can go ahead and, you know, sell the rights from, you know, 1900 when it's 2050. Like, that doesn't seem like that's right to me. Immediate generation maybe could sell it.
It's wild.
You know, like it was my dad or whatever, but
wild, wild, wild.
This segment was also brought to you by Upload, 2 seasons now on Amazon Prime.
Dork. Remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Join our Facebook group. We're also on Twitter at @BuyPopcorn. Patreon. Our show is independently funded. Therefore, all the expenses are paid by our Patreon supporters like Stan. So thank you, Stan. We really appreciate all the contributions. It helps us do this every week.
I stopped contributing years ago. So.
God damn it. Never mind.
Thanks for having me on.
You can go to patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. That's patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. There's lots of bonus content. Plus, there's different tiers where you can suggest a topic or even come on the show like Stan here. So there you go. Now, we've got one spoiler for review. We were going to have Hocus Pocus 2, but Amanda didn't make it. Wah, wah, wah. So, well, I'm going to talk about Blonde here in a second. But first, let's talk about Smile.
I'm going to go see it tomorrow night, so I'm going to take my headphones off.
All right. I mean, it's spoiler free.
I don't want to know anything.
Okay. I mean, they smile. Blind. Literally, that's the movie. They smile.
Is it good? Yes or no?
You can shut up to listen to the goddamn podcast. I don't want to tell you. Now we're going to talk about Smile. Troy has stepped away because he doesn't want to be spoiled, even though we don't spoil stuff usually when we do reviews. We give you warning. So Stan, you and I saw this. Yes, Smile?
Yes.
Okay. After witnessing a bizarre traumatic incident involving a patient, Dr. Rose Cotter starts experiencing frightening occurrences that she can't explain. Rose must confront her troubling past in order to survive and escape her horrifying new reality. And her reality is everywhere she goes, there are crazy people smiling at her. Sometimes they're people that are actually there. Sometimes they're people that have been long gone. Now, I know you're a doctor, so maybe you see this differently than I did. But what I particularly liked about Smile was its approach to how trauma can affect the mind. What did you think about this central theme of a being using trauma to kind of destroy or torture its victims?
I actually thought it worked very well. It was a much more serious-minded film than I anticipated based on the trailer.
Yeah, it was.
But I found its use of trauma and mental illness secondary to trauma kind of encapsulated all in the main character played by, is it Sosie Bacon?
Yeah.
Sosie Bacon. You know, she demonstrated a lot of different aspects of post-traumatic issues, and it worked really well, in my opinion.
Yeah, there's actually, I mean, a large portion of the film actually takes place in a mental, a floor of a hospital, right? A mental health floor. And she's a doctor on call. That's why she's the one that's there tending to a patient who comes in and basically starts this ball a rolling. And that's where you start to see that she's actually struggling too, which, you know, I've found most people that work in mental health probably have some kind of trauma of their own. Because that's a lot of times what drives them to get into that field to help other people. And I found it fascinating that they were really showcasing how people weren't taking them seriously because they just wrote them off as crazy, which is something that happens in for those that are struggling with mental health all the time, where they go to seek health and they're just written off as crazy. And I thought it was really cool that they kind of they put that as an underlayer, because so often, you know, that's kind of ignored in horror movies where they just write people off as crazy all the time.
There was that aspect, but I thought another layer to that, from how people were reacting to her, even when they acknowledged that she was going through this, and even when they did believe her, they didn't know how to approach her. They didn't know how to help her. Mm-hmm. And even the ways in which they were trying to help, because they, you know, were concerned about her mental health. You know, it's a difficult thing. You know, it's one of those things where the family and loved ones of people that suffer from mental illness, they're very strongly affected, and because they don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. So I think it kind of shone a light on the need for more education for everyone on how to deal with it, how to approach things, and the fact that sometimes it's just really difficult.
I was shocked. A horror movie kind of had those levels.
Like I said, it was a lot more serious minded than I thought. I was excited about it. I saw it like on the preview night and thought it was just going to be sort of a larger budgeted big studio horror film that was going to be a lot of fun. And it while it was those things to a degree, there was a heaviness and a weight to it that I certainly didn't expect.
Did it work for you? Did that heaviness, that weight, or was it like kind of taken away from, I want a fun horror movie aspect?
No, it did. I still thought it was fun. Just, you know, I'm a big horror fan, and I thought the scares, and the jump scares, and they're plentiful. And it, they kept it sort of progressing in a way that even when it felt a little too heavy, there was something to kind of ease the anxiety. But instead of it being a laugh or a lighter moment, it was, you know, just a jump scare that was really effective. And so a lot of the film, I found myself, you know, with a big smile on my face, just because I was, you know, actually jumped in the theater, which doesn't happen very often. So yeah, it did work for me on a lot of different levels, I thought.
Yeah, there were a lot of moments where I felt similar to A Quiet Place, where I was on pins and needles. I wasn't chewing popcorn or anything. I was focused on what was happening, because there were a lot of long cuts, and I think that played well. Well, Sosie Bacon stars as Rose. We talked about her. She essentially carries the entire movie. So where did her performance sit with you? Because she's really the person we're following for the entire almost 2 hours.
Yeah, she's in virtually every scene, and I didn't think she had a false moment. I thought she was great in her portrayal of, you know, like I said, she is a mental health professional. She had this true desire to want to help people, and she portrayed that. But then as she herself began to demonstrate her own mental health issues, and not only did she portray those well in her efforts to hide what she was going through from those around her. Mm-hmm. I thought some of those moments were some of the most powerful, when she's, you know, standing in front of a mirror, just trying to conceal what she's going through from those around her and herself to a degree. I thought she just did a fantastic job top to bottom. I thought all the performances were really good. I didn't expect such gravitas to come from Cal Penn. So that was,
yeah,
that
was, he was pretty good.
He really was.
As her boss. He's her boss in the film.
Yeah.
Parker Finn wrote and directed Smile, unknown commodity to me, but I would say that Parker seemed to take a lot of time to let a scene breathe and play out versus constant quick cuts and jump scares. Like you were talking about. I mean, there are a few of them, but overall it's very, very kind of relaxed and laid out. Were you unnerved by this direction? Were you happy with it? I mean, where does this land in terms of a horror film for you, since you're a big fan, like you said?
I thought he hit a lot of notes that are popular in horror. There were a lot of nods to other horror properties. You know, there were a couple of nods to even like The Evil Dead. Mm-hmm. Obviously, The Ring has had a lot of comparisons to that. And they kind of wore those proudly. You know, there wasn't any hiding. He's like, yeah, this is a movie for people who enjoy horror films. And I really like that. And even with its, you know, kind of fresh take on mental health issues, there were a lot of things that were sort of by the numbers, but done really well, in my opinion.
Yeah. I think Ring is a fair comparison. It's really close to the same kind of atmosphere and how it unfolded, really, in many ways.
Yeah, it's like I said, there were moments that were deliberate, and like you said, there was some time to breathe, and that doesn't always happen in horror. I think it's something that is actually happening a little more in the past few years, and I'm a fan. So sure. Anything new and different is always welcome.
They're a lot more contemplative than they've been in years past.
And still, you know, there are some just holy cow kind of moments in this movie that really takes you by surprise.
Yeah.
And are pretty thrilling. Kind of hit a lot of good notes.
The ending was really good. I like the ending a lot.
So. Absolutely.
So if $10 is the full price of admission, what do you give Smile?
I really like this, and I'm going to give it $8 right now, and it might have room to grow down the line.
Wow. I'm going $7. Yeah, this is a way better than the trailer. I did not like the trailer for this. The trailer got really annoying because it was literally in every freaking movie I saw. So I was really happy with the end result.
I enjoyed the trailer. I only saw it two or three times at various films, and I was a little upset because they did show a lot of the notes. It kind of left you expecting some things from time to time. And that was my only disappointment with the movie. Once I sat down to watch, I'm like, oh, okay. You know,
yeah, they showed too much.
A little too much. Yeah. A little too much.
Speaking of trailers, I think it's funny. Billy Eichner's Bros came out and it didn't do very well. I mean, Smile was a big hit and that one was, and he immediately, I don't know Billy Eichner from Adam. I don't really know his work, but Bros was a movie that I've heard great things about. Reviews are astounding. I didn't get time because I've been traveling. Otherwise, I would have went and seen it myself because I've heard great things about it from word of mouth. But the trailer, I thought, was not good. Like, I've seen the trailer probably 30 times in front of things and just didn't find the trailer to be very captivating or, you know, enlightening in any way, shape, or form. But, of course, he jumped on Twitter and starts blaming the audience for not showing up, which I guess is fair, but I mean, you also have to take into account September's a bad time for romantic comedy. Romantic comedies haven't been selling in theaters for the last few years. It's LGBTQ, so there probably are some people that wouldn't go see it because of their personal beliefs or whatever. But I don't think that's the majority. But he immediately starts attacking the audience about it and calling people that don't see it homophobic weirdos and things like that. I'm like, that's just... I hate whenever there's an attack like that, because what you should be saying is talking about the word of mouth. People love this movie. Keep getting that out there. Positive, man. That will get people to maybe go see it, and it'll be a cult hit down the road. It might not make your box office, but it could be a huge cult hit down the road where a lot of movies still find traction.
Yeah, his reaction, it kind of smacked of sour grapes. You know, comedies and romantic comedies, but comedies in general, just they've struggled for years now. Mm-hmm. This isn't a movie that I think I would have ever gone to see in the theater, but if it was released on Hulu, I probably watched in the first couple of weeks. So I think it was just...
Which is probably how most people feel right now. I mean, that's just how things have been the last couple of years.
Yeah, I can't say that I've seen a trailer for it, so I don't know if it looks good or not. He's kind of funny, so I've liked him in what I've seen of him. His first show that was on Hulu, it was honestly a little too mean for me, so I don't remember. I think it was called Mean People, or
I didn't watch it. I don't, like I said, I don't know him very well. I just know from the trailer and seen him on Twitter. Just weird. But I want to move on to Blonde. Anybody else see Blonde on Netflix?
Oh wait, before you move on, did you talk about the Major League Baseball marketing thing when you talked about Smile?
And Smile? No, we didn't, because we didn't give a shit. We saw the movie, so nothing. We don't care about the marketing.
It's actually a really brilliant marketing thing if you want to talk about it.
Well, you wouldn't talk about it. Why don't you? We talked about Smile for 15 minutes, so why don't you talk about whatever it is? You had to leave because I don't want to be know anything. You could have, would have been a great time to bring it up when we were talking about it.
Well, I was going to insert it, but then you were sort of talking about the other thing.
Please.
I just like to make it work for Aaron.
Enlighten us.
Smile actually had a really great marketing idea, because most people in the United States are aware that this is like the final week of the baseball season. There was some big wild card races trying to make the playoffs, and as we move into October for Major League Baseball. Mm-hmm. So they actually hired, instead of paying like thousands of dollars for like TV spots and the normal ad campaign. What they did was they actually paid actors to sit in the stadiums behind home plate and wear smile t-shirts and literally smile the grin the entire game. So as they're doing like the television broadcasts, like these people are like in the shot behind home plate the entire time. It was super creepy to like watch that the whole nine innings of the baseball game. And that was like across the board from like New York to Oakland over the last week and the lead up to the movie's release.
I thought it was a good marketing gimmick. I did wonder because almost on all of the broadcasts, the announcers like drew attention to it, and you know they brought the camera in. So mm-hmm. I wonder what agreement that they had with the broadcast networks, if any, or if it was a more organic circumstance.
It would almost make me watch baseball. Not quite, but almost. All right. Well, Blonde. Did anybody watch Blonde besides me? Or am I the only one? I am the only one. Well, I want to mention it was written by Andrew Dominik, which is based on the book by Joyce Carol Oates. Blonde was also directed by Dominik, and it stars Ana de Armas as Marilyn Monroe in what is described as a fictionalized chronicle of the inner life of Marilyn Monroe, which is a goddamn understatement. Like, Dominik has shot Blonde with a very loving lens. It's beautifully crafted and lit. The score is haunting. I find the camera work and the music just phenomenal. And Ana de Armas is very impressive as both Marilyn Monroe and Norma Jean, respectively. But Dominik has been on every single talk show circuit he could find the past few months to tout the sexuality of Blonde as being necessary. So why does it feel nothing short of exploitative? She's talking to a CGI aborted baby for no reason. She's being Me Too'd by JFK. None of it carries any real depth or weight. It just feels like I'm going to push the boundaries because of art. And that's fine. This is my little monologue review. But if you are dancing with the history of an icon, maybe give a shit about how you're handling the topic. Because by all the director and cast interviews, everyone keeps saying how much they love and respect Marilyn. Yet the movie I watched is basically treating her as Harvey Weinstein would have in the business. I mean, I just feel like it was gross how they mishandled this mess of a script. I cannot stand when the term art is just used as a bulletproof vest. It's not. This is a bad script. It's not art. It's simply bad. And in almost 3 hours, it's also extremely pretentious. If $10 is the full price of admission, I give Blonde $3 out of 10. That's all for cinematography and Ana de Armas. I think she deserves to come out of this unscathed. I think she gave it her all. It's just not a good movie, and it's a bad representation of Marilyn Monroe, I think, overall. Movies like these are exactly why many people say female directors should handle stories that are inherently feminine to avoid train wrecks like this. Just, I'm very disappointed. Did you both leave?
I've read all of the, just sort of the venom aimed at this movie, and I haven't seen it. I have liked Dominik's first two movies. So I've been wondering, a lot of the criticisms that I've read are, you know, people angry about how Marilyn's been portrayed. Mm-hmm. And I've just wondered, is it her portrayal? Because, I mean, obviously she had a lot of trouble throughout her life and her career. So was it more... I mean, I hadn't heard about the conversation with an aborted fetus. So yeah. What was it exactly about her portrayal that is so problematic?
It's nothing about Ana de Armas. I mean, sometimes her accent's probably a little too heavy. She does the best she can, honestly. It's over-sexualized. I know she's a very sexualized icon. I'm well aware of that. I know a lot of her personal backstory. I'm well aware of that. It's just... instead of treating it with what I would consider respect to her, it feels like they're putting her through the same ringer the system did. Like the character of Marilyn, they're putting through the same. They're not showing her the respect that they're saying the studio never showed her, that the studio system never showed her, that people never showed her. They're just using her as some kind of canvas to paint whatever they want on it. I just really think it's a bad movie. It's just a bad film.
Like they're doing that to Ana, or they're doing that to the Marilyn Monroe character?
Marilyn Monroe, like, well,
even putting this out.
It's a fictionalized account, so it's not, some of it's true, some of it's not true. Okay, fine. I'm not big on overly fictionalizing characters that are real, unless you're doing, I mean, if you're, you know, if you're satirizing something or you're really just, you know, just sticking it to somebody who sucks, like Inglourious Basterds. I mean, they're riffing on Hitler. Fine. You're taking it to Charles Manson and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Fine. Marilyn Monroe didn't deserve this. She deserved better. She deserved a better film. She deserved a better script. She had the performance, I think, the director has spent so much goddamn time talking about how important the sexuality is for her to, in front of all these sexual situations that happen in the film, and that how it's handled tastefully. And, you know, sometimes you gotta get that NC-17 rating because it's very important to the art. It's not. So often in this film, it's not important to any of the story. It's just gratuitous and it's exploitative. You know, I'm sure many people will like it. I'm not going to be one of those people. And I like Dominic's work too. He did, Jesse.
Yeah, The Assassination of Jesse James.
Yes, thank you. And that's a very good film.
And Killing Me Softly.
And Killing Me Softly. Both very good films. I guess Brad Pitt should have showed up more often here, and, you know, we'd have been better off. Any recent film or TV recommendations you guys want to talk about that we haven't talked about?
I can't remember if I talked about it a month ago or so when I had COVID, but I can't recommend From on Epix enough. I went back and watched it a second time. It's really, really, really good.
You did.
I also had binged watched Industry, and the second season of Industry just wrapped up, and it wraps up in a crazy ass way.
And where's that at? What's the?
That's on HBO Max.
Okay.
So it might not be there for a third season, but the first two seasons are actually really good.
Is it like Succession?
It's basically like Succession meets How to Get Away with Murder meets Boiler Room.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's bankers in London trying to make their way in order to make Cut Day so that they can actually become bankers. And then the second season is the people that make Cut Day in the first season continue on to figure out like what's going to happen when the bank starts to figure out if they're going to merge with the New York office.
I get it.
And it's a battle between New York and London for who's got the best cred.
The best cred. What about you, Stan?
I'm always in a constant state of catch up. So if I don't go to the theater to see it, it's probably been a couple of months since it's come out, but recently watched Glorious, which is on Shudder. I think it came out about 5 or 6 weeks ago, and it's, it's a COVID time production, very small cast. It's got Ryan, is it Quayton that was in True Blood. And J.K. Simmons, or at least the disembodied voice of J.K. Simmons. And it's called Glorious, and it sort of revolves around a rest stop glory hole. And
what?
and it's a cosmic horror film. So, you know, you just draw whatever conclusions you can from that.
They got J.K. Simmons for this?
Yeah, he's the voice behind the glory hole. It's basically just the two of them having this conversation for 80 minutes, but it's, you know, it's short, it's tight. And I really enjoyed it. I thought it looked great. It was fun. It was something different. So I really enjoyed Glorious.
I think I get where the Glorious comes from now. Troy, you know what a glory hole is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's where the candy comes out.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. All right. We have to move on. I got to mention a movie, by the way. We did review it last week, in case you didn't hear last week's episode, the fall TV episode. We mentioned Bandit. We reviewed it. But after escaping prison, a charming criminal assumes a new identity and robs 59 banks and jewelry stores while being hunted by police. It's based on a true story starring Josh Duhamel, Alicia Cuthbert, and Mel Gibson in the all-new movie Bandit. You can own it or rent it on digital now. And if you want a chance to win a digital copy of that, you can email us at contest@thehollywoodoutsider.com. That's contest@thehollywoodoutsider.com with your name and the subject line, I'm a bandit. And I want to mention again, if you haven't heard our review, Amanda actually wrote a review on this on the site as well, and she really enjoyed it. She thought it was fun. So there you go. Bandit. Now we're going to move on to our From the Outside In topic. Because it's Halloween month, we decided we would each dig around to find 5 films at least there's honorable mentions, as rarely ever mentioned as a good fit for this time of year. So what we're looking for are movies that are hardly ever talked about. Not the big ones, not the Cabin in the Woods, not the Halloween, you know, not Halloween 3, those kinds of things. Because too many films are perfect for this time of year, are the same ones you hear about over and over and over again. So let's see if we can give you a good recommendation for Halloween when you're trapped under the covers, wishing the trick-or-treaters would just go away, or you're wishing your kids would go outside and go play with them. We want to mention Trick or Treat as being one of those little gems right at the top, because we've talked about it for years, so it's almost become popular, not by us, but just in general, it's become almost popular. Stan, you're five, and then we'll go to honorable mentions later, but first off, you're five movies that you think people should check out that they might not have even heard of.
All right. Do you want to just kind of give them a little rundown? Or
yeah, just go through one at a time. Just take a breath so we can talk about them each, you know, as you go.
Okay. Ordered these kind of chronologically, so probably the deepest cut is from 1975, a movie called The Devil's Reign.
I don't know this one. What's it about?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of a typical, if you have any familiarity with like a, you know, these older movies decrying the horrors of Satanist cults. This one, I'm not going to like give this full-throated recommendation and say it's great. There are parts that are really good, but the cast is what really kind of brings to the table. It's got William Shatner, Ernest Borgnine, John Travolta in a small role, and Tom Skerritt. Like,
get out of here.
Yeah, from the mid-70s. And they are all just giving it everything. Like, the first and the third acts are just really, really entertaining. It's got a lot of good practical effects. And it's got, you know, kind of this underlying creepy vibe throughout it that a lot of movies from the 70s has. It looks great. And it's just, you know, it's not maybe one that you plan your night around, but it's a good one to have on in sort of the background of a Halloween party. It's a lot of fun.
Disagree. I'm going to plan my night around that. William Shatner and Ernest Borgnine, are you kidding me? I'm sold. Jeez, that's quality acting right there, boy.
Absolutely. You got an Oscar winner in there, and like I said, they are just loving every second they're on screen too.
Well, Ernest, we've got it. Satan. That's the worst William Shatner I've ever even tried. That was horrible.
Oh, he's in full Shatner mode too. So
is he ever not? Is he ever anything but William Shatner in anything he ever does?
We must escape the zombies.
After, you know, after Star Trek, but before T.J. Hooker. And he did a lot of movies, these like low-budget horror films that are just kind of fun.
Got to pay the bills, man. Before that Star Trek the movie came out, he had to get a job.
That's right.
All right. What's your next one?
From 1977, it's a Japanese film. It's called, the English translation is House. It's sometimes say this Haosu.
Yep.
And I honestly, I have no idea what this one's about. It is one of the wildest movies I've ever seen. I think ostensibly it's a haunted house film about some schoolgirls going to a country home. But just the imagery and the visuals of this, it is a riot. I saw it at a midnight movie many years ago, and I'm really excited because they're doing another midnight movie of it here in a few weeks. And it is just unlike anything I've ever seen before or since. So everyone should at least go and watch the trailer. And if it didn't pique your interest, then I don't know what will.
I saw my brother is a big Japanese movie fan. And I remember seeing this a long time ago. And all I remember is like, they show up at the house, right? When they first get to, cause they're walking through a field, a bunch of these girls, and they go to this house. And then like, there's like a something flies by. And it's the most obvious puppet you've ever seen in your life. I mean, it's just, and then the rest of the movie is a lot of just bad effects like that.
Oh, it's crazy. Like the effects, especially by today's standards, are just god awful. But it's really entertaining. I think
kind of amazing.
It was this commercial director that was tabbed to make a horror film because Jaws was so popular in Japan. They wanted to start this new wave of Japanese horror, and this was what they got, and it's something.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's something. It's like watching The Room when you watch it. I mean, I just feel, except better. It's a, I think better. I don't know how you define it, but it's a lot of fun to watch with people.
But it is. It is.
Yeah.
The next on my list is the 1988 remake of the movie from the 50s, The Blob.
Kevin Dillon, man. Kevin yes. Dillon.
Mm-hmm. And his hair.
Yep. That, I remember that movie.
Yeah, I had not seen it until recently, and it I just thought it was fantastic. A lot of great practical effects. It sort of zips along. It's just pure 80s cheese, and just had a good vibe throughout. It's just a lot of fun, some genuinely good scares. And it's
did you ever see the original with Steve McQueen?
Yeah, long time ago.
You like this more? I mean, I guess it's more fun, and the effects are definitely better. That's for sure.
Yeah, you know, it's I think it's definitely scarier and has some more horror effects. You know, the McQueen one was just pure camp and, you know,
oh, yeah.
A good old school drive-in sure. movie. But this one has a lot going for it. And, you know, again, Kevin Dillon and his hair are almost worth the price of admission.
It's so funny. He's always been just shy of ever being close to his brother.
Oh, you can see the seeds of Johnny Drama in 88.
You can. And everything he's ever done, too. He's like William Shatner. Yeah. But that's a fun movie. I'm glad you saw that. I remember that came out in 1988. That was, I remember the summer it came out. I think Return of the Living Dead Part 2 came out that same summer, if I remember right.
Oh, that's a heck of a summer.
Yeah. It was a lot of bad horror movies. Yeah. Send more cops.
I actually bought this on 4K. So
what?
Oh, yeah.
You bought The Blob on 4K?
Heck yeah, man. eBay's way to go for your...
God, it must be nice to be a doctor to throw 40 bucks away on that.
Heck no, man. It's 10 bucks on eBay.
10 bucks?
Heck yeah.
That's sad. I might actually buy The Blob for 10 bucks if I can get it.
I mean, the shimmer off of it alone. I mean, it's
oh, yeah.
crystal clear, you know?
Just a big giant... That was a pink blob, right? That one was pink?
Yeah. Yeah.
I haven't seen it in a long time.
But. It's very goopy and schlocky and in all the best ways.
But in the 4K, it's more magenta, like the director really wanted it to be.
Yeah, exactly.
It's blobbier.
It's blobbier. All right, what else you got?
So next is actually one of my favorite all-time horror films, and it's starting to toe the line, a little more popular, but it's 1994's In the Mouth of Madness.
Oh, John Carpenter.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. It's he calls it the finale of his, what is it? The Apocalypse trilogy, mm-hmm. which is, The Thing, Prince of Darkness and In the Mouth of Madness. And it's Carpenter's take on Lovecraft. And it's, you know, Sam Neill, just doing Sam Neill things. Kind of love him and everything, but
that's your description. Sam Neill doing Sam Neill things.
I think he's a great actor, but he's Sam Neill. You know what you're going to get.
Insurance investigator. He's looking into like a horror writer's
disappearance.
Yeah,
yeah. Sutter Kane, who is obviously they're borrowing from Stephen King's persona at the time, and this guy that goes missing. But his books have an impact on people, and you start getting a taste of what it's doing to his readers pretty early on in the film. Mm-hmm. And it's genuinely scary and goes into some cosmic horror, alleys that are a lot of fun. I'm a big Carpenter fan, and it has that sort of downbeat ending that sort of leaves a smile on your face somehow. Absolutely love In the Mouth of Madness.
It's one of his better movies that nobody ever talks about, or not enough.
Yeah. I just think, it's really one of my favorites, maybe like my favorite horror from the 90s. And I think it needs more love.
Was that one? Well, I guess it was 94. Yeah. All right.
And my last pick, is from, 2009, and it's The House of the Devil.
And okay, it's directed I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Directed by Ty West, who's had quite mm-hmm. the year with X and Pearl. And it's kind of a throwback, to late 70s, early 80s, about a girl who's a college student, just looking for some extra cash so she can make a down payment, and she gets an offer that's too good to refuse. and for a reason. But it's got a great cast. The lead is Jocelyn Donahue, who's popped up in a few things over the years. But it's got Tom Noonan, who just has a great, great presence. And Mary Warnoff, who's kind of a scream queen from the 70s and 80s. And Greta Gerwig, Dee Wallace is in it. And again, it's just it's got a great, creepy, unnerving quality just from the opening scenes. And it just it's a slow burn, but it never loses your attention. Just love that one.
And it's got a lot of grain. It's got a grainy look to it a little bit. Mm-hmm. So it kind of has that older feel like you were talking about. Jocelyn Donahue, we actually interviewed her like several years ago for something. I don't remember what it was, but she's very nice. Nice lady. Tom Noonan's
in it. Yeah.
Yeah. He's fantastic. Manhunter. Manhunter. I'll never forget. Like, he just creeped the shit out of me. He does everything he does. I mean, even when he's playing a good guy, I can't not be creeped out by him because I saw him in Manhunter where he's butt naked and he's, you know, chasing William Peterson around the house.
He's so good in this movie. You know, just every moment, he's just he's exceptionally pleasant and polite. And every second you're seeing him, you're just screaming at the lead saying, no, get out of there. Out of there. You could tell this guy is just
get out.
up to no good.
This whole movie should be called Get Out.
Yeah.
Whole movie.
That'd be some copyright infringement. But
It was before that. Troy, I think you're up. What do you got? What are your five you want to recommend?
Yeah, my first one is actually from 2016. You can actually rent this on most services for $4 in the U.S. And it's called Southbound. This one is actually trying to bring the anthology horror back to the forefront because it is an anthology film as the film progresses around multiple characters that are driving southbound on this road. We follow the five separate stories of these travelers confront their darkest fears.
I have seen Southbound. It's pretty good.
Next one is The Girl on the Third Floor. This is from 2019 on Netflix. Phil CM Punk Brooks plays Don Cook. He's a former criminal ready to start fresh with his pregnant wife, Liz, who's played by Tristy Kelly Dunn. He basically buys a new home in the suburbs, thinking like Money Pit, but in a horror sense.
I don't know.
Things appear to be looking up, but soon after moves in, learns that the house has got a dark history and experiences all kinds of strange events. That basically put him and his wife on a collision course. You can check that one out again on Netflix.
I have to check that out. I've never even heard of that.
Then we have in 2019 also over on Hulu, we have Wounds, based on Nathan Ballingard's book, The Visible Fifth. Wounds actually centers on Will, who's a bartender who picks up a phone that a customer left behind at his bar. Once he starts inspecting the phone, however, a series of bizarre and disturbing events begin to happen. I'll forewarn you on this one. The cockroaches, so many cockroaches. It's like arachnophobia, but for cockroaches. So if you have a cockroach thing,
yeah,
don't watch this movie.
I'll forewarn you again. Armie Hammer's in it, so there's a chance somebody gets eaten.
Yeah. Armie Hammer, Dakota Johnson. The cockroaches was too much.
Zazie Beetz.
But it was good. It was an interesting play. But the cockroaches. Oh, my gosh.
Again, I got it. The cockroaches.
2010, The Crazies. Again, you can rent this for $4 on most of the major services in the U.S. If you're especially fond of the 1973 classic, you'll actually equally like this remake as well. The film basically centers on the town of Ogden Marsh in Iowa. It turns into a literal nightmare when a biological agent starts to infect people, turning them into vicious killers. Four residents fight to keep themselves safe as the threat continues to rise within the town. This has probably got the most notable actors out there. It stars Timothy Oliphant, Rhonda Mitchell, Joe Anderson, and Danielle Panabaker.
I've seen that multiple times. I love that movie. It's a great movie.
It feels like A Quiet Place, but louder. Like, except that without aliens, the townsfolk start turning into aliens. So it's like literally you don't know if Aaron would literally come through the screen at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. It's a really good movie. An interesting, unusual thing about it is Timothy Oliphant actually plays a sheriff.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike, you know, any of his other characters.
Literally everything he's ever done. Yeah. Except hey, Go.
Girl Next Door. He played something different in Girl Next Door.
Sure. He is really good in typecast, though, isn't he?
Yeah. Even in The Mandalorian, he was a sheriff.
That's his thing. Although in this one, he's a very even-tempered sheriff.
Yes.
Who's really quick on the draw.
And finally, we have from 2016, again, you can rent this for $4 on most of the services. It's The Alchemist Cookbook. Sean, played by Ty Hickson, is a loner who resides in a tiny shack in the middle of the woods. He spends his time experimenting with chemistry recipes, which seems harmless at first. However, his chemistry habits lead to disaster when he summons a demon. This one wasn't that great.
Then why do you recommend it?
I made it,
it
through, and I needed 5, so I included it.
Well, hang on. He had 2 that I argued were not obscure, so we'll mention them so he gets his mention. But Stan, you can decide if you think they're obscure. I say they are not, but you go ahead.
Well, I said The People Under the Stairs because I haven't heard it as of late. I mean, it was a big one when it came out, as well as The Faculty. I thought those are 2 like ones that were big in the zeitgeist back in the day, but have kind of fallen off the map. So I was going to resurrect those into the zeitgeist because we're just that awesome of a podcast and we can move the needle that far.
I think we're going to agree with Troy on this one, that those, they were big at the time, but you know, you ask someone to name 3 Wes Craven movies and People Under the Stairs is probably not going to make his top 8, and The Faculty, you know, you don't hear about that one a lot, unless Jon Stewart makes fun of it, right, for his role. But yeah, they're kind of forgotten gems and they're both really good.
I'm saying they're not forgotten. I literally hear about them all October, every single year, all the time. People on the Stairs, or somebody in our Facebook group just had a post about People on the Stairs, literally like yesterday. I'm just saying. And The Faculty, also one of the best soundtracks out there, by the way, if you're looking for a fun soundtrack. Great soundtrack.
Great soundtrack.
Yeah. And Josh Hartnett has never been cooler. He was really, really cool in that movie.
But see, Doctor has a PhD and you don't. So
what is,
I go with the Doctor.
I'm on Rotten Tomatoes and he's not, bitch.
He understands the way Troy thinks.
So there you go. I didn't have to go through all that school. All that learning. Okay, so here's my 5. I obviously have honorable mentions, but whatever. I'll do my 5 and then we'll roll on through. The Wolf of Snow Hollow, I have mentioned before in the podcast, but I think everybody should definitely check it out. It's on Prime Video, so you can watch it on Prime Video. If you've got a subscription, you don't even have to pay extra. Terror grips a small mountain town as bodies are discovered after each full moon. Losing sleep, raising a teenage daughter, and caring for his ailing father, Officer Marshall struggles to remind himself there's no such thing as werewolves. It stars Jim Cummings, who also wrote and directed it. We've had him on the show for Thunder Road from a few years ago. It is freaking fun. It's a fun little, is it a werewolf movie? Is it not a werewolf movie? I am a sucker for werewolf movies. That's why I'll mention Bad Moon, Silver Bullet. I can keep going on werewolf movies that people should check out. But The Wolf of Snow Hollow is one that is also funny. There's a lot of comedy. He is a shitty cop and he's trying to solve murders. It's way over his head. And, you know, everybody's convinced it's a werewolf and he's just like, it's gotta be a person, but it really seems like it's a werewolf. So it's a fun horror movie and it's gory too, but it's also fun.
I'm surprised you didn't mention The Howling in your favorite werewolf movie.
Because everyone knows The Howling because you don't understand what obscure means. That's
yeah,
why.
But we did remake it with S.S. Wilson and remake this movie, right?
That's true. Nice plug. Nice little connect the dots there. So The Wolf of Snow Hollow, that's one. And then it's your next, which is Adam Wingard, who did Godzilla versus Kong. So boy, has he come quite a ways. It's on Peacock. It's also, you can rent it anywhere, but if you want it free, it's on Peacock. When the Davidson family comes under attack during their wedding anniversary getaway, a gang of vicious killers soon learns that one of the victims harbors a secret talent for fighting back. And Sharni Vinson is that one. Her name's Erin, and she's freaking awesome. So basically, it's a really good movie with one of the best scream queens of the last 15 years, and no one ever talks about this movie. I love Your Next, and I love her performance. She fucks everybody up. It's fun. If you've never seen it, it's fun. Okay, so my next one is one that I think is criminally underrated. Nobody ever talks about it. It's from the 80s. It's called Vamp. 2 fraternity pledges travel to a sleazy bar in search of a stripper for their college friends, unaware it is occupied by vampires. Think From Dusk Till Dawn a little bit. Led by Grace Jones. She's the lead vampire. It's very 80s, full of neon, punk rock. The cast is fun as hell, especially the chemistry with Chris Makepeace and Robert Russler, who are the 2 best friends. And also, fun fact, Michelle Pfeiffer's sister, Dee Dee, is in this, and she is hot. Troy, you're shaking your head like you've seen Vamp?
I have seen Vamp.
Oh, my God.
It's one of those that's like, seen, it's one of those when you like come into your, like your 12, 13, 14 year old phase and it's like, yeah, let's like watch like stuff that we're not allowed to watch. And this is the one that my buddy had on his shelf. And it is just, it's a freaking great time. It's so funny.
It's, yeah, fun. It's scary. Have you seen that one, Stan?
No, I haven't. I'm going to have to put that on the list.
Oh, it's a fun 80s movie. It's so 80s though. So if you don't like the 80s, if you're one of those people who are like, Miami Vice sucks, fuck Airwolf, you're not going to like Vamp. But I love it. I love it. My next one is The Gift, and it's on Fubo. Oh, I'm sorry. Vamp is on Tubi and Plex, but you can rent it too. So I don't know how you get Tubi or Plex, but if you can get that, it's on there. The next one is The Gift on Fubo and Showtime. It is not the Jason Bateman movie. First off, this has Cate Blanchett, Keanu Reeves is an absolute bastard, Giovanni Ribisi, Greg Kinnear, Hilary Swank, J.K. Simmons, Gary Cole, and Katie Holmes. This is Sam Raimi's The Gift. And it's about a fortune teller with extrasensory perception who is asked to help find a young woman who's mysteriously disappeared. And this is Cate Blanchett before you knew who she was. Like, this is the beginning of her career. She's still phenomenal in this movie. I mean, she's phenomenal in everything she does. And Keanu Reeves is a real dick, and he's good at it. It feels like he's acting. Like he accidentally showed up and decided, I'm not going to be Johnny Utah today. I'm going to be an actor. And he crushed it. I think he crushed it. I love this movie. It's a lot of fun. It's a really creepy, eerie thriller, but it's also fun to watch like in October.
And the cast is good too. I mean, it's definitely like people like if there's like an obscure movie that you'd want to grab and you're like, I don't know any of these other people that you've been talking about, this one, you at least know everybody in the movie.
Absolutely. My fifth one is a movie called ICU, which is on Amazon Prime. But you can also rent it, but it's also Amazon Prime. Strange occurrences plague a small town detective and his family as he investigates the disappearance of a young boy. Helen Hunt stars in this, and it seems very much like it's going to be one kind of movie. You're going to be convinced when you're watching it that it's one kind of movie. And then about halfway through the movie, you see the turn, and it's really unnerving as hell, and it goes a completely different direction. I had such a great time with this. So much that they put my review quote on their Blu-ray cover and their poster, which isn't why I'm recommending it, but it doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt. It's a fun movie that nobody has seen except me and anybody who listened to me when I reviewed it in South by. It's worth the watch.
Or because we heard of that was actually on the poster and stuff. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think I made people watch it. I know I have the Blu-ray somewhere around here just so I can look at my quote every now and again. I'm like, that looks good.
Yeah, the turn is like totally, totally unexpected.
Isn't it cool though? Like, it's a cool turn.
Yeah, it's like, you look like your dog head. You go, brr, like, that just happened? Brr.
How did I miss that? Because you really, really feel, you're convinced it is one specific kind of movie. And
for sure.
It is totally against what you think it is.
Yeah, if it was like, I'm out picking apples one day, and then all of a sudden it was like, hey, we're driving race cars.
Yeah, it's a total flip.
It's like that drastic.
It's a total flip.
What just happened? But it works.
All right, that's my five. But Stan, now we're back to you. Any honorable mentions that you had? You go ahead if you had any.
Yeah, I've got a ton, so I'll try not to overdo it. I think one of the movies that I just think everybody should go watch is The Invitation. It's on Netflix. It's by Karen Kusama, and it's just it's a fantastic sort of slow burn movie. Movie called Demon Wind. I think it's on Shudder, and it's sort of a Evil Dead ripoff. That's just a good time. You know, get a lot of practical effects and, you know, fun for everybody. Jacob's Ladder. If you haven't seen that one.
Oh, Tim Robbins.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. You look at that movie, which came out in 90, and you realize what kind of impact it had on a lot of horror in the future. It's a really good psychological thriller.
The Invitation, that's, you don't mean the one that came out this year, right? You're talking about the one where it's like a dinner party, that's ex-wife it. Or something is invites.
Yeah, it's the one from 2015. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. And also Sleepaway Camp. I mean, it's an early 80s. So just have to mention that. I think everybody who's a fan of movies should see that at least once.
We did a commentary track, or not a commentary. We did our live reaction track of watching it.
Yeah, it's a bonus episode. Yeah.
So I recommend everybody check that out because I don't know how interesting it was for a big portion of it, but once you get to the end, I'm sure it was damn entertaining.
It definitely puts a different spin on the rest of the movie.
That movie's messed up. Did you have any other ones before I go to Troy?
What I watch pretty much every year just to have on at least for half an hour is the Garfield Halloween Adventure. So
what?
You know, it's something fun for the family.
Do you really? Are you making this up?
No. I actually have a digital copy that I walked through.
Oh, my God.
I love it. It actually kind of unnerved me when I was a kid. So it's I've got a soft spot.
I mean,
spot
the way he murders lasagna. Like, do you see that?
Zinga. Da-da-da-da-da-da. All right. Garfield Halloween. I'm putting that on the list.
Yeah.
I want to watch that.
It's right, way Troy. Better than The Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown. Like, nothing ever happens in that movie.
Troy, you don't really like horror, but, you know, any Halloween movie can do. Do you
no,
have any
but
honorable
I could get behind some zombie strippers, which is the name of my honorable mention. if you haven't checked this out, I kid you not. The thing that's the horror part of this movie is that Congress has failed. They have outlawed public nudity. And George W. Bush has been elected to a fourth term. I mean, that is the setup for this craziness.
Oh.
It does star Jenna Jameson and Roxy Saint.
Well,
but yes, it also includes Robert Englund in this movie. With basically the not too distant future, secret government reanimation chemo virus gets released into Nebraska and lands in an underground strip club as the virus begins to spread, turning the strippers into super zombie strippers. The girls struggle with whether or not to conform to the new fad, even if it means there's no turning back.
Wow.
Totally worth a watch.
Is this what Amazon Prime?
No, the only place I could find it was a $4 chuck on Friday night on your favorite streaming service for rental.
I think it had been on Prime, and I was like, "That I'm afraid to watch it because I'm afraid of what I would be recommended next."
All right, anything else, Troy?
It's Robert Englund. I mean, it's like perfect.
That doesn't surprise me that he would be in there. Honestly, he's open. You know, he's free. We could probably get him on this show if we got.
We could.
One movie you should never watch at Halloween is the Munsters remake. The Rob Zombie movie that's on Netflix. Atrocious. Absolutely atrocious. You just said zombie and then you think of Sherry Moon Zombie, who's awful in that movie. So, sorry. That was just a connection I had to mention.
As opposed to all of the other movies that she's in?
Which are all coincidentally Rob Zombie movies. Yeah.
That was a dishonorable mention.
Yeah, a dishonorable mention. There you go.
Yeah, she wasn't bad in Lords of Salem, but the other ones that I've seen are pretty
bad. I've only liked one Rob Zombie movie, and that's Three from Hell, which I think is actually kind of a great movie. And the rest, I think, are just kind of awful. So
was the third in that trilogy.
Second. It was like the second in that trilogy. Or, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It went House of Thousand Corpses.
No, I'm sorry. Devil's Rejects is the one I loved. That's
the one that ended with Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Yes, that movie rocked. That was the one. I'm sorry, not Three from Hell. The Devil's Rejects. The other one sucked. Sorry. There we go. Oof. I mean, so he doesn't have anything I can really pick from, so I just get titles wrong. You know what I'm saying? It happens. Okay, what else do I have left? I have The Final Girls, which you just have to rent digitally because it's not streaming for free anywhere, but Tessa Farmiga and Malin Ackerman star is a young woman grieving the loss of her mother, a famous scream queen from the 1980s who finds herself pulled into the world of her mom's most famous movie. Reunited, the women must fight off the film's maniacal killer. It's really kind of heartfelt, but fun. It's so much fun, and it's gory, and it's a nice throwback to the 80s camp killer movies, which I love. That's like a sweet spot with me. So I absolutely love that movie. I think it's way better than it ever got credit for. I feel like not enough people appreciate it, and you should definitely find it, The Final Girls. Green Room is on Fubo and Showtime. Patrick Stewart is a badass in this. Anton Yelchin is one of his last roles. It's a real white-knuckle thriller about a punk rock band who's forced to fight for survival after they witness a murder at a neo-Nazi skinhead bar. That's the setup, and it's great. And Patrick Stewart is a prick, which is nice because he never plays these kind of characters.
That movie is hardcore. Like, it is.
Oh, man, it's intense.
It is. It really is. And Patrick Stewart is awesome in it.
Absolutely. So is Anton. I mean, he's great. It's a really surprisingly great movie.
I agree.
Yeah. Last one, Werewolves Within. If you haven't seen this, I recommended the hell out of it last year. I'm going to do it again this year. It's on Fubo and Showtime. This is a fun Halloween movie. It's gory. There's also a mystery at play. It's like a Knives Out with werewolves in a way. A lot of humor. And what it's about is a werewolf seemingly is slaughtering a small community, and we're trying to figure out who might be the killer. You might think it's like Wolf of Snow Hollow. It is not. It is very much, it's based on a game, and it's who's the werewolf, basically. Who is the werewolf? And that's what the movie's about. It's a lot of fun. And it has Sam Richardson, who's always fun, and Milana Vantrub, the AT&T commercial lady. Mm-hmm. So she's great, too. She's funny. Super funny. Okay. Now we've got some listener recommendations, which I want to mention because they always come up with some stuff that maybe we didn't think about. So I really like that. Michael James Rook wants to mention Idle Hands. That's a great movie. Jessica Alba is
a good one. So that, to me, that falls like with The Faculty and People Under the Stairs.
You're drunk if you think Idle Hands is in the same book as Faculty.
It was in that same era. Like that was a
yeah,
was a
but
big
more people saw
then.
The Faculty. I still know people talking about The Faculty. I'm not knocking either one. I like both movies. Seth Green is hilarious in Idle Hands. Damn it. Kyle Nolan says Transylvania 65,000. I remember that.
Is that with Jeff Goldblum and Ed Begley Jr.?
Yes. Yeah. Transylvania 65,000. Rachel Isendorf said Repo the Genetic Opera.
But this sounds intriguing.
I know a lot of people love that. I have not seen that one, honestly.
It's been on some streaming service. It's been in a queue of mine for at least 10 years. So when you get around to watching it.
Jennifer Miller, two that are horror, not specifically Halloween, but she watches them every October. The Invitation, which you mentioned, and Hell House, LLC.
That one's genuinely frightening. It's a found footage that it's pretty effective.
Did it work for you? Did it scare you? Did you pee?
It did. It did.
Okay.
Wet myself a little bit.
House because of it. That way.
Ashley Stockton says Harry Potter. I mean, I get that. Wizards, right? I wouldn't call that obscure in any way, shape, or form, but... Becky Trumbo, Lady in White, the version from the 80s with Lucas Haas, then Nightmare on Elm Street 3, but that's not so obscure. But Lady in White, yeah, that's a very obscure 80s movie. You guys don't
Nightmare
remember
Elm Street
this at all.
2.
Yeah, I remember it, but I don't think I've seen it since I was like 10 years old. So it's one of those, what do they call it, gateway horror.
Yep.
Yeah. But he's like haunted. I think he witnessed a murder of a little girl or something. And then he's, yeah, and it's him growing up in a small town. It's an interesting movie. Creepy.
Speaking of Nightmare on Elm Street 3, it was the same director that did the Blob remake.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Some horror cred.
There you go.
I don't know if Nightmare on Elm Street 3 considers horror cred.
Come on, Dream Warriors?
You shut your mouth.
Dream Warriors is
Dokken.
Yeah,
it's a great action film. It's not a horror
film. The Dream Warriors. Oh, that video just...
It's fantastic fun, but it is not a horror movie.
I'm not convinced it's actually a movie, but I like it.
I do too. Nancy's back. It's all that matters.
David McGraw, Rawhead Rex. Its screenwriter, which is Clive Barker, is based on his own story, which has pretty much disowned it. And the monster looks kind of weird, but it's a true guilty pleasure of his. That's funny. I remember that one. It's not good. It's awful.
It's pretty bad.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
But it is fun.
Brian Lowry says Tales from the Crypt, Demon Knight, which I love that movie. Billy Zane rocks in that freaking movie. And also Night of the Comet. Yeah, that's pretty interesting.
House is an obscure one, but that's also one that if you're from the 80s, you like always watch Night of the Comet.
I mean, that one I would say is pretty obscure. I don't know many people that have even seen
it. It's a great film. It was fun.
It is the 80s encapsulated in a single movie, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Andreas says Return of the Living Dead 1 and 2 and Night of the Creeps. I'm with you 100%. Send more cops. Send more cops.
Not obscure, though.
No, but I don't care. You know what?
Oh, now he doesn't
care. According to your standards, it is, because if everybody knows about it, it's still obscure. Wild. Ty Nelson, top of my head, Slither. I would say that is obscure because that's only diehard film fans that know that movie. Yeah. Justin Vaughn, Tales of Halloween, Scott Cagaro, Pumpkinhead. Oh, it's a great freaking movie. Pumpkinhead is great. What a great monster. Stan Winston, his lone directorial credit, if I remember right.
Can we get a Pumpkinhead 2, but it's the Charlie Brown character, so that the Great Pumpkin actually shows up and it's Pumpkinhead?
Wow.
I think there's a Robot Chicken where that happens. They combine the Great Pumpkin and Pumpkinhead.
Because that's amazing. Like, I'm thinking about the Winnie the Pooh thing, what's happening, because Winnie Pooh's coming into, like, you know, anybody can do anything with it again. Mm-hmm. I just want the Peanuts to do that so that someone will finally finish, you know, the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown.
I want to watch that Pooh murder movie. It's like Pooh being a mass murderer. I want to see that.
Yeah, it's called Five Nights at Freddy's.
The last one is Alyssa White. Not really obscure, but Train to Busan and The Wailing. Train to Busan is my favorite zombie movie of all time. And The Wailing is so many different things at once, and they all fit together brilliantly. Plus, it's pants-crappingly scary. I don't think Train to Busan, it's once again, is obscure to hardcore film fans, but I don't think most people have seen that movie.
Never heard of it.
See?
Yeah.
It's a really good zombie movie. It's a lot of good characters, and the action's great. The Wailing, it is long. Like, it is a... like 2.5 hour horror film, which those are tough to pull off. Man, it is bleak but very good.
So it's a meta viewing. You're crying by the wailing by the time it's over.
Is that the one with the sickness where it's like a plague or something like that? Is that The Wailing?
No. It's a little more esoteric. It's about a cop who's sort of bumbling, and he's investigating these murders in a small town, and it just goes to like some really, really bleak, dark places. You may be talking about or thinking of The Sadness.
Okay, maybe.
Which was a sickness that was sort of like a zombie movie, and it's maybe the most brutal film I've ever seen. I almost had to stop it. It is that violent and difficult to watch.
Excellent. I like these. God, I like having a lot more things to watch this Halloween. Now, we're at the end, basically, of the show, but I'm curious, before we wrap up, is there anything that you guys specifically always, and I mean like every year around Halloween, you feel like you want to watch or you have to watch? Repeats. Every year, you have to watch it.
Not that I have to watch, but I avoid The Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown at all costs.
So you mentioned the one thing that you definitely do not watch.
No, if somebody were to turn it on at a house party, I would drive home.
Why? Why do you
because
hate Charlie
nothing
Brown?
Happens? He sits there all night and nothing happens.
But you just don't watch it. All you have to do is not watch it.
I mean, it's a metaphor for religion. So,
it's a fair statement.
That's always how I've seen it. Linus has so much faith, and nothing is rewarded.
You wait there all night, nothing happened. That was funny.
I mean, at least Santa shows up as your parent. Oh, sorry for the under 8-year-olds in the audience.
Oh my God.
Spoiled it for you.
What about you, Stan? Anything you religiously always watch?
Oh, I'm very basic in that. I always watch the original Halloween.
The first? You don't like shake it first. Up? Cause I watch a different one in the series.
I will watch... an additional one, but usually Halloween night or the night before, I'll almost always watch the original. It kind of has a special place in my heart. I actually think Trick or Treat might be a better Halloween movie, but I don't always watch it every year. I watch it a lot, but I almost always watch the original Halloween. A few years ago, I got to go to a drive-in to see it, and it was fantastic.
Halloween? To see Halloween?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's a great movie to see at a drive-in. It's a great movie. Trick or Treat, man. I am so happy with that movie because I remember when it came out, I saw it. It never hit theaters. I mean, I think this year they're actually going to put it in a few theaters for the first time ever, which is awesome. I'd love to see it in a theater. But that was one where it was, you know, went straight to video and you heard a few people talking about it and it became like this cult sensation. I remember we talked about it on the show for years and then suddenly I start, and it's not because of the show, I just would run into people that, they just discovered the movie and I'm like, it's becoming popular like 10 years after it came out. I think that's phenomenal or nine, whenever it came out, but it's awesome that people love that movie now because it's fun. And if you've never seen it, it's like anthology, a lot of different, there's like 4 or 5 different horror stories happening at once and there's witches and there's a creepy monster. And I'm like, there's a lot of different stuff happening. That's a lot of fun.
It's got Brian Cox in it, who is awesome.
He's always awesome.
That is true. I just, it, the best thing about it is the little glimpses of the other stories you get in every story that you don't necessarily see the first time around. And it's one that gets better with subsequent viewings.
The only downside is there's been like 1,000 movies called Trick or Treat. So it's hard to find it, but it's the one with Brian Cox, like you said, and Anna Paquin's in it too. Just fun. I the first story got me. I remember watching it, and then the first story ends, and I'm like, oh shit, this is not what I thought. Okay, this is interesting. It's good.
It was one of the better like just movie finds that I've ever had. I was kind of transitioning houses or apartments, and it was like living with my grandparents for a few weeks, and I was
all ready to be like, I'm an ally, but
I had a room, their cable selection wasn't great, so I was just like pour through like Walmart discount bins and picked that one up one night, and just was like really pleasantly surprised when I found that one.
Yeah, that's a fun find. Apparently, Troy sucks.
I do watch The Ring every year.
You watch what?
The Ring.
Why didn't you say that when I asked you the question the first time?
Well, because I was
now like, I don't believe you.
I was trying to think like, is there anything I like religiously watch? And it's like, yeah, I guess I do watch The Ring in October.
Do
not
you?
Not the same day, not the same time. Just like, but I always do sometime between like, you know, first of fall and Thanksgiving, I do pop The Ring on occasion, you know, from time to time.
It's getting a 4K release. It should be in my mailbox here in a week or two.
Oh, is it getting a 4K this year?
Yeah.
Ooh, that means I'll get my copy will automatically upgrade on Apple TV that doesn't actually expire or go away.
I feel like Stan's rebuilding his physical media collection as we speak, as we're here.
I've ordered 3-4K videos during the podcast. So.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Mine's a Silver Bullet. I watch Silver Bullet every Halloween. I freaking love Silver Bullet.
So. Let me guess, that's a werewolf movie.
Yeah, man, I love werewolf movies.
With Gary Busey.
Gary Busey. He always called me that. That's a great freaking movie.
And Corey Haim in a wheelchair, R.I.P.
Yeah, R.I.P. He didn't die in the movie. Or did he? Bet later. It's fun. I like that movie. And there's a lot of great... Well, I mentioned earlier, but Bad Moon, that would be a very, very obscure, because nobody's seen Bad Moon. But it's a really fun... It's basically where this woman and her son are...
Are chased by a werewolf?
No. No, her brother actually comes to visit them, and
he's a werewolf.
Man, I will punch you in the dick. And he comes to visit them, and the son starts believing that he is possibly a werewolf. And then basically, the son's dog is trying to warn them, and that's where things just go south. And it's got Michael Paré, I believe. Michael Paré's in it. And the dog really becomes like a full-fledged character in the movie. And it is like, if you're a dog person and you love werewolf movies, it is a perfect combination, because it's, man, I love that movie. I've watched it so many times. And then
is it
tell
a female
people,
dog?
Who gives is that a why shit? You like it's the a movie? Dog. It's a dog. And the dog is protecting the family, and nobody, it's basically like, it's like those movies where nobody believes the kid because the kid. And the dog is trying to warn them constantly, kind of trying to warn the mom constantly, and she will not listen. And they start to just, you know what, we're going to have this dog is a nightmare and da-da-da-da. But the dog is the freaking hero of the movie. Ultimately, the dog is the hero of the movie, and it's a freaking awesome way to
You get a lot movie. Of that from, like, the dog's perspective, if I remember
yes.
correctly.
Yes,
yeah, it's a really yes. interesting take. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. Well, you have seen it, so somebody has seen Bad Moon. Yeah! God, thank God. We're ending there, because that's
perfect. I love a good werewolf movie. They're not a ton of them.
Not a lot of good ones, man. Dog Soldiers, Howling, obviously. American Werewolf in London. I don't love that movie, but I love the transformation scene.
There's not a lot of them. You've mentioned like 15 in this podcast alone.
That's like all of them, Troy. That's all of them. There's not a lot left, you know? You know what? Share your thoughts on this episode or anything else in our Facebook group. We're on Twitter at BuyPopcorn. Our website is thehollywoodoutsider.com. You can rate us and subscribe on your preferred podcast app. Please do that. You can also find John's artwork on Insta or Twitter at rjohndraws, Amanda on Veronica's Marshmallows and Smirk, and at Sink Into This, Troy at Troy Heinrichs and The Blacklist Exposed and Beyond Westworld. Me, I'm presenting Hitchcock. Those other two with Troy, and I'm at Aaron Smirks. Stan, thanks for doing this, man. Really do appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me, guys.
How does it feel filling in for people that just were too bothered to be here today? I mean, as a Patreon supporter, you can tell them anything you want. That's the way I understand it.
Like I said, I really enjoy doing this, so I actually slashed both of their tires, or I hired somebody to do it so they couldn't get home on time. So that was the backstory today.
You'll have to come back on more often then. Because apparently people just stop showing up. So,
well, I just appreciate you coming from Mount Doom and coming in character for keeping the Rings of Power.
I really wish people could. People could see your background, man, because it really is like some sexy Mount Doomish lava lamp action.
That's right, it is. In the daylight,
he's got his button, sort of his shirt like unbuttoned, like three buttons down too. It's almost like strip club.
He's like going for like Embrace of the Vampire type feels here or something. I don't know.
I asked my wife to paint this room basically the color of the bathroom in The Shining. It is a horror themed office color.
Nailed it as he finishes his drink, just like Jack Torrance would. All right, that's going to do it for this episode, which, by the way, is a movie I don't like to watch on Halloween. I hate The Shining. That's all I'm going to say. Remember, the next time you head to a theater, buy popcorn. Fuck The Shining. I can't say that enough.